You are listening to Let's Go JoJo, the weekly JoJo's Bizarre Adventure podcast from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Niall.
That's me.
And me, Dwayne. Brian is not here, obviously.
Brian is away on a secret mission in uncharted space.
Tonight's episode is... Oh, crap, I have the Crunchyroll titles here. Green Day and Sanctuary Part 2, Episode 31 of Golden Wind.
Let's conflate two of them together.
Yeah, Green Tea and... Oh, I did. Green Day and Oasis, Part 2 is what we're on. Or Green Tea and Sanctuary, if you want to read what's written down instead of listen to what people are saying.
There is bound to be a band called Sanctuary out there. We're probably going, what the fuck, dude?
M was really pleased, like, last season when Reverb was called... No, sorry, Echoes was called Reverb, because that was the name of M's band when she was in school.
Oh, well, you got a fucking claim there, then.
Yeah, yeah. I know.
You fuck these guys doing?
where do we open? I think we open, like, kind of... It kind of rewinds, like, a few seconds to the last episode, where it's the big hit that... Bruno is already dead. Yo, or rather, will be totally fucking dead by the end of this, even if they make it through and succeed in every way.
Yeah, it's just like I died back then, but your ability is like giving me the chance to try and see all this through to the end. I'm probably dead, I'm already just kind of sort of zombie has been made by your power.
But yeah, he's happy enough that this is going to give him more time to finish the mission. He's not sure how far he's going to get.
I'm not sure ourselves, because they've paired off and they're divided up to take out the Chico Lata cycling machine. And he's, with the sticky fingers and zipping open the walls, thinking, I'll take on Seiko. Just zip open the walls and punch him.
Yeah, so he's hiding underground. It doesn't matter. I can open up. I can make openings where there are none. So this should be pretty good. Also, he's the only guy who can stay on the ground without getting hit by the mold.
Exactly. And Seiko takes up that challenge and says, "Okay, I'm gonna kill this Bucciarati." Just because at the video camera here, and
he's rooting through his pockets. He's setting up the video camera, and Bucciarati's like, "Is this guy for real?
This guy is for real.
This guy is the real deal."
He's like, "Oh shit! He knows karate or something." Because I'm with sticky fingers doing the fucking arty arty arty. But he's on top of it. He's actually quick. I don't know if that's his standard, his own physical ability or what. But he's fucking me up.
So apparently it's like partially physical ability, because he's strong and fast anyway. I mean, like, I guess you got to be to swim through mud, which is technically what he's doing all the time. But he's bouncing his fists off his rubberized ground, so he can punch back faster.
Bouncing his feet off it is like as
he's bouncing his limbs off it. Yeah, to like kind of like a reverse kind of like a Luffy kind of thing, where he's using the ground to make his punch is more elastic, if that makes sense.
Well, as Bruno said, it's like a boxer using the ropes to get momentum then, yeah.
Yeah, so he can use the entire, the ground he's standing on to gain momentum. And he does a fair bit of damage to Bruno and manages, like he nearly gets him, but Bruno zips the ground from underneath him so he can fall down further. And this was all Seiko testing him to see if he'd fall down further, and goes like, yeah, the mold definitely isn't working on you. That's a dead guy.
Well, that's my ass. I kill you the regular way then, by punching her and digging around on the earth and shit.
Do it the old-fashioned way.
Meanwhile, on your other side of the street.
Yeah. Well, I guess they're going up the building to get at that helicopter, currently rooted to the top of a chimney, I think is the way you'd put it.
Yeah.
By Giorno's by Giorno's ability to grow a tree.
Chikorata, I just like, oh, I'm caught up in this fucking roots in the title. I'm going to retreat into the back and see what they do. Mist's like, fun, I got this guy right here. Fun, Sex Pistols, I can just fun, send in there, flying in, just shred this guy to bits.
Fun. Yeah, he just shoots off five quick shots. Because he's like, well within range, but you know, they kind of get to the helicopter and they're like, Mister, he's not here. So they're kind of rooting around the helicopter, seeing where you are. And then they get fucked up, like teenagers
movie.
In a slasher movie, yeah.
It was like, what's
that was horrifying. I didn't need
number
to see this.
Number one, like, number two, number five, don't come in here. He's a fucking killer inside. Oh, shit.
The amount of violence I've seen, but I felt really bad when I see chopped up fucking Sex Pistols around the place. I was just like, oh, no, not the Sex Pistols.
Not a cute little bullet, Ben. Not a cute little all munched up, getting dissolved by mold and crap. Oh, no.
Their limbs getting chopped off, heads getting chopped off. I was just like, oh, this is nasty. I didn't need to see
that. Just the squeaky voice for the guy, like, no, no.
They're little bullet children. I don't need to see them being brutalized.
Consequently, then, Mr. F being the stand user, is just erupting in gouts of blood. It's like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, I guess if you damage one of them, it might damage him a little, but five out of six have been really fucked up. Yeah. So the only one left is number five. Number five is the coward, isn't it?
Number five, the lovely boy. He's a darling child.
Yeah, yeah.
He cares about his mammy.
So Jorno's like, okay, don't send the last guy up here because that will kill Mister, because that will kill 100% of his stand rather than six-fifths, I guess, of his stand, yeah.
The dust like Jorno's pissed off. He's like, fuck, this fucking guy was just creeping and sneaking around with his fucking mole. I should have just, like, gone run in there and punched him in the dick, but I fucking didn't do that. But I'm gonna fucking do it now, though. And you guys like, okay, it's like, there's definitely something alive in the helicopter. But how the fuck did it not see him? I'll tell you how, because as he gets into the helicopter and looks around, he gets ambushed by parts of Chocolata.
Because he sees, the medical tools on the tray. He's like, oh, is he a doctor or something? And then gets punched by a disembodied arm. And what's Chocolata's thing? He says, I studied medicine when I was a little kid, and also, by torturing people. To see what parts of the body you could survive without. Mm. And I can close off, the veins and stuff with the mold. But, I mean, he's got one arm. He's got no legs or other arm. And he's, a dangling, wiggling spine constantly just out the bottom of his torso. It's nasty.
Yeah. But, using Green Day as well, you can sort of reassemble the bits, some kind of combining robot, the grossest one ever, and then...
Yeah, he does stitch himself back up as well. Yeah, when he needs to.
But it's totally grody. I did all this, just in case I ever needed to hide in a small space and ambush anybody. Like you right now, and I fucking got you right where I want you. But besides being, having deadly flesh-dissolving mold, Green Day also has fast, precise punches.
Well, it does have a human body. That means it can punch.
Yeah.
That's the rule, I think, now.
Yeah. Which Jorno was putting the back foot and gets punched out of the helicopter and then just manages to save himself on a tree branch jutting out of the thing. But he's in a bad spot because he's just moments away from just plummeting and as a result getting consumed by the mold and probably would dissolve before he hits the ground. The branch gets taken over by the mold and it dissolves and he's plummeting then to his doom.
It's when he's plummeting to his doom. This time, Mister, even though it's his last bit of life, I guess you'd call it, his last bit of stand, has sent number five with his last bullet up to help Jorno out. And number five helps Jorno out by shooting him through the hand, which seems like, what the hell are you doing? But, Jorno turns the bullet into a tree that is attached to the helicopter so you can run along that branch.
Yeah. But then that dissolves and it snaps off. And it's like, oh, yes, you're falling now, Jorno. You're going to be fun eaten by the mole. Let me see that look of despair in your face just before you die. Yeah, that's what I want. That's what I wish I had the video camera right now. It's like, oh, my gosh, my brain. Where did it come from?
So Jorno, while falling off a branch that was dissolving by mold, kicked part of it into the helicopter blades, calculating its precise trajectory. So when it was dissolved by the mold, it would turn back into the bullet because that would destroy it, thereby turning it back to its original form. And the bullet would shoot that fucker through the head.
Yes.
Fucking hell. All right. So he gets
so
shot in the head.
So much legalese. I had to, technically wait until...
it was destroyed by the mold in order so it could be a bullet
reverse
again.
Reverse the effects.
And also calculate precise, thing of kicking a tree that would then be a bullet into a helicopter blade. Fuck it. Yeah, there's a lot of technical stuff going on there. But Jorno managed to do a backflip and catch onto the side of the building that the helicopter's attached to. So he's just barely there. And he has won. And number five is celebrating. He's like, hang on, number five, can you back up there a bit? I don't think that fucker's dead. And I'm going to talk to him like he's not dead. I'm going to explain to him all the injuries I have. and be totally honest.
Keeping to his living up to his family name and facing full like consequences of confirming the kill, like making doubly sure. Oh, yes. I should probably go in there and cut his head off or something. That sounds oddly familiar now. Why would I like do something like that? Why would I want to go over there and make sure his body is dead? Also, like threatening him, saying, "Hey, I can see you've got a massive hole blown through your skull. You're just lying there, and you're fucking seem completely dead. However, this is JoJo, or it's
yeah,
very similar to JoJo's in the past, though. And if you fucking get the fuck back up, I'm gonna put you back down on the ground again. So you burn, I fucking get up again. Are we clear? Are you gonna do nothing?"
Because I think he made them the promise of, if you lie there and do nothing, does he say he let him go or something? He says he let him off, basically, or something like that. Like, he'll let him go lightly or something along those lines.
Yeah.
And it turns out, haha, I was alive this whole time. You did shoot me through the head. I mean, that was straight up, that happened. But what you didn't see is I detached one of my arms, and that arm is currently strangling Mista over on the roof.
If you better back up now, I'm gonna kill him. Okay, like between this and what we had back in the helicopter there, when I got a drop on you, I feel so lucky that a guy like me can fucking get the drop on a guy like you. Oh god, my brain again. There's a scarab beetle burrowing off my skull. That's right. Because I figured you'd try some bullshit like this where you get shot in the head but someone wouldn't die and do this whole rigmarole while you try and fake me out. But luckily, I put a little bit of life energy back into the bullet just right at your skull, so it would hatch into a beetle and burrow its way out.
And that's the reason I've been talking this long, not as a thing so you could sneak up on Mister, but so it could grow into a full-sized beetle and eat its way out of your brain.
But like, no, you said you'd let me go if I did. It's like, do you think you'd actually be as lucky as that? And he gets, never thought I'd be so happy to see a Muda Muda Muda.
Man, that was a good, well-deserved, very, very long one that was very satisfying. Yeah.
This is a real piece of shit. So
I feel like it's a similar to like Jotaro beating up Steely Dan.
Oh yeah. Well,
it's a very similar situation kind of thing where it's a nice long one. It's like, that's nice.
Yeah, he's going hammering to do his muda muda muda, but then he's turning in a in there too. He's
just to let you know who he's the progeny of. Yeah,
the kid, the kid's a natural at punching guys really fast for a very long period of time.
So that has pretty much worked out. Mista's all of a sudden back up before he's been healed, which is a bit weird, but I guess, you know, maybe Giorno's healing is taking effect latently or something. Doesn't quite make sense, but whatever. It's fine.
So Chikolata, he's also dropped a mobile phone he was using to communicate with Seko, which Seko has now picked up because he sees he's got two voicemails up on it. He's like, who is this? What is he calling for? When did he call me? What's this about? Hey. Seko's me, Chikolata. I just open the helicopter here, but I'm gonna be okay. I got a plan to go up and take out these guys. Like, okay.
Well, he says like I've already taken out Mista because he pretty much did for the most part, and it's like I just got a plan to take care of this other guy. He's like, when you're back, I'll give you belly rubs. I think of like a pat rather than belly rubs and sugar cubes. He's teasing him with how many sugar cubes he's gonna give him.
Yeah.
He's going to give him lots of sugar cubes.
Yeah, but dude, it's you and me for strongest, best team, and we're going to surpass ourselves in this fight. I think he probably even in this fight will surpass the boss, because whoever is below us or is in our way, we're going to fucking take him out. Because you and me, man, we're fucking strong. We're going to fucking do this. I love you.
Like, I fucking love, I'm going to love to see motherfuckers try and say JoJo's isn't gay on this fucking episode. It's no longer even close to subtext. They literally fucking said it. No, he loves him like a brother. Fuck off.
Yeah.
He loves his gimp friend like a brother. Yeah, my hole he does.
Anyways, I'm gonna kill these guys now. Bye. And Seko was affected by it. It's like, sounds like they probably got him. And if he's getting his guys, if you got his guys, I'm gonna fucking do the same. I'll sneak up in his butchery right now. I'm going to give him what for. Punch him right in the dick. Pull him down. Don't care if he's a zombie. I
think he's gotten away from him, but you can see his feet have slowly sinked a little bit into the pavement, and he's he's popped out behind Bucciarati, so... Yeah.
Or at the very least, it certainly seems like Psycho is like, yeah, he's got a kind of a new determination to take out Bucciarati.
Yes.
You're going to find out his different his resolve stems from something else, but...
Yeah.
We'll see. Meanwhile, well, I'll just before we close out there, a glimmer of binoculars as a figure with a flat top haircut observes these battles being waged in the streets of Rome.
He's in a wheelchair. He has a heart shaped earring.
Who could this mysterious voyeur be? And what intentions, what plans does he have for our boys, be they hero or villain? What's going on with that guy?
Like, I love the word, like, yes, we've saved it. It hasn't gotten to the Colosseum. It's like, how many motherfucking people have died? Holy shit.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Yeah.
It was all villain building up to the beatdown at the end, I guess, which is a beatdown that, if I recall, the comic went on for, like, multiple pages. It was just, like, you know, a splash of him just fucking throwing fists at this dude.
Nice.
Which they did very proud in motion here. So good on, you know, because that is a real piece of shit. The one real fucking deranged sort of setup here, or like, these fucking two absolute degenerates, absolute psychopaths. But then they have this strange bond, you know, which is relayed via sort of poignant, like, voicemail reminders of the last thing they said before they died.
Besides the one time when he was petting him. Yeah, most of their relationship has been over the phone. But it kind of works somehow. It's great when you have, like you say, complete fucking degenerates, mass murderer fucking villains, but you kind of like them because they're such bastards.
Yeah.
Like, even when he was pretending to be dead with a hole in his head, lying off the back of a helicopter, you could see, like, he had his tongue lolling out really fakely, and he was smiling. And I was just like, dude, come on, fucking... You can't help but like the fucking guy, even though, obviously, monstrous. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, we'll see. We'll find out how that transpires. Had to help to get out of this mess, or at least maybe a sucker gets out of this mess next week, if he does.
In part three.
Yes.
I guess there's enough of this fight left to at least warrant a part three. Yeah.
Oh, there is. Well, there'll probably
go to the Colosseum in the second half.
And then we'll move up with this flat top haircut stranger, whoever they are.
Mysterious, potentially Frenchman.
Yes, definitely not a stand user we've seen before in previous incarnations of Jodo. No.
Yeah, another good one. But now it's time for the podcast within a podcast. Let's go where we're talking about other things that we watched this week.
Everything else.
Not everything else. Good Lord. Thank God. Not everything else.
Most things else.
Will we start up with, Dororo, episode 19. Do I have the right name there? The story of Amano Jaku.
The Amano Jaku. Which we kind of really factors in just at the end. Well, I suppose what it's been doing for the rest of the episode.
But. Yeah, the plot is about what it's doing, but the plot is about silly shenanigans, which is great. I'm enjoying it. I kind of need the lighthearted stuff from all the fucking shit from prior.
Yeah, it was, like... Yeah, oddly enough, it was like a kind of a comedy episode, even though it was clearly something like really off happening. But from that, deriving some humor, so... That's all right.
I mean, like, as cursed villages go, this place has a pretty, like, okay one to deal with.
It's fairly benign compared to some of the fucking blood curses we've seen earlier in the program. So this two of the adopted or on the road looking for a blacksmith because Dororo's one Yakimaru's arm swords. Seen a little bit of use. One of them got snapped off. Previously, we gotta get these things fixed up. They've been
some guy off screen said there's a really good blacksmith like a mountain over, but it was actually like three mountains over.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they're gonna check out this village, see that if this guy's the real deal. They meet up some. I don't think he says what he is. He's just some guy who lives in the village, and he's saying it's like, oh yeah, the blacksmith's is a real piece of shit. He made my fucking wood chopper there, and it's just crap. I wouldn't fucking write home about it. And his daughter's an ugly ogre, basically, you know. So,
yeah.
But as he's everything he's saying doesn't look like what he's doing, and even Dororo gives the chopper a go, and it, like, cuts through a log like butter.
Yeah, especially when he's talking about the daughter.
Because
like,
he's
oh,
all blushing up, yeah. Like, I was like, oh, is he trying to put them off the scent? Is he like, oh, I fancy the daughter, but I'm going to say, oh, she's ugly, stay away. Like, that's initially what I was thinking, is, like, basically trying to put them off going to the blacksmith.
Mm.
But
he just knows the little things as well, where they have the, let's say, the lady takes a door coming by, and they're coming by the shop, and it's like, oh my god, you're such an ugly girl. Why? In that dress, you look completely horrible. Oh. In a kind of laughing and smiling way, I thought, why would you say something like that? And why is she okay with it?
So they meet up with the blacksmith. He's like one of those like stoic old dudes, but at least he gets a bit of a characterization later on. Mm. But yeah, he's happy enough to fix the swords, but he does ask Yakimaru, like, what have you been killing with these? Like, demons? Oh, fuck, we gotta purify these motherfuckers.
Yeah. Well, it's
an overnight job.
Well, it's always more like the daughter of Okawa is not some kind of boor or pig or anything like that. It's actually quite a nice young lady who's... So, again, something that's obviously, like, not quite right with the village.
With what's been said and what's happening, which is obviously the theme of it. Yakimaru has picked up the habit of rubbing his forehead off things. Earlier on, it was a horse. He's like, look, Dororo, a horse. And he's rubbing his face against a horse. Yeah. And he does it against this lady, and she, like, he's like, dude, that's weird. People don't like that. And she's instantly smitten. It's like, oh my, I'm getting the palpitations.
Well, it's like, how many, like, handsome young boys happen through this village
that rub their forehead up against you? Yeah, I suppose
so. That's forward, but his outsider ways.
Yeah, so they head to the temple. I think it's when she introduced them to their father. She's talking like first impressions are very important, but in the meantime, the boys have been trying on the masks in the that are hung up on the wall. Like, yeah,
just fooling around because, you know, when one of these is like a 7 or 8 year old child, the other is like a bigger boy, but effectively a 7 or 8 year old child.
Like at the very least, he doesn't know a lot of social cues. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
It's not cool to take masks off someone's wall and just try them on for fun.
Yeah, what are you looking at now? Because, like, yeah, what are you guys doing back there? But they're still rocking the things when they go up there.
And they go up to the temple, yeah. And you see a little imp cast some presumably slightly benign green magic, because green tends to be good, but in this case it's, like, not particularly evil, I guess.
Yeah, it's just...
It's not helpful, for
as
one.
As they say,
yeah,
later, it's more of a form of mischief.
Yeah. Exactly. I assume he's like a little goblin or something like that.
Yeah, but he's like, oh, I'm not doing the right thing anymore. I present the base at the altar, and it's like, picks up Dororo and puts him on there and says, no, not me, bro. I'm not that. So it's, what, can't you not see what I am? What's the matter with you?
Yeah, he's kind of confused himself. He's like, okay, what's happening there? How do we get to the major mix-up, the major drama? That's the bit I'm kind of...
Well, it was sitting inside later, and then they're going to stay like in town. I'm going to wait, just stay with the blacksmith and his daughter, and then when...
Oh yeah, because Dororo has explained to Yakimaru that the swords will come here when they're done. So Yakimaru thinks they will arrive here by magic, I assume. He's just like, the swords will come here. I have to wait here.
Yeah, but it's like as soon as they're finished, we're going to be gone though. We'll be done.
Sorry, the sound cut out there.
No, sorry, that's like this roar is coming in and out of the room, so I just need to mute things.
Sure, no, that's great.
Anyways, I'll take that back in.
Yeah.
So he said, it's kind of wait around for us, and then like, Dora's like, hey, well, wait around here for your swords when like they're gone, but when they're finished, we're going to be out of here. And then, like, Yakimaru was like, no, I'm going to stay here. Wait, what?
What about the quest? Don't want to do it.
Don't want to do the quest.
What about your body parts? Don't need them. Yeah, he's kind of, like, very confused. It's like, what? But what about the whole fucking thing? I'm trying to remember how the proposal happens, because that's a like a long lead up.
Yeah, I forget now as well. It's just I guess she's just in the room, and it's just like I think she kind of just kind of bored, and he's like, "Well, why do you want to stay here?" "Yes, I want to stay here. Stay here with you forever." But I'm saying, "What? Stay here with me
forever?" Oh yeah. It's some kind of misunderstanding, and yeah, and she's going like, "We're going to get married," and Yakimaru is like, "Yep, we're going to get married." And Dororo is kind of going off in a huff, very angry.
Like,
and
he's like, "What the fuck?"
Dororo looks happy. He says as Dororo leaves.
Yeah, and then like, what the fuck? That bro was all up for a fucking big quest. He's about to get his body back. Come on, fucking, I'm gonna go back there and give him a piece of my mind. And Dororo comes in, and says, "Say, I hope you two are really happy together.
Wait, I don't care what anyone says. You're a beautiful couple, and will be happy for the rest of your lives." Wait, what?
Wait, I support your decision. No. I think this is what's best for you. No.
Yeah, so that's pretty fun.
It's basically the same kind of thing as Talking Heads in JoJo, where like something has,
yeah, very similar.
It's taking you over, and you're saying the opposite of what you mean.
Yeah, you do the exact, or say, and sometimes do the exact opposite of what you want to do. And it sets us up for some good comedy things. You don't see, like, I guess Yakimaru mostly comes off as a straight man, but even in this, he gets, like, a few comedy moments. I love it when your one was dragging him to the wedding and he was hanging onto a pole.
Yeah.
Like, yes, take me to the wedding right now, kind of thing.
Souls will come here. Souls will come here.
Dororo is initially confused that the father isn't going to his daughter's wedding, and he's like, "Well, I'm a swordsmith. That's my job." She understands that it's the most important thing is making swords, but I wish I could make a sword that would end all wars.
Yeah. Well, Dororo's also kind of they come together with swords, kind of cheesed off and said, "What's fucking this?" Yeah. Well, if he doesn't want to go on a quest, he'll get one of these precious swords anymore. So he sticks into the blacksmith trying to chuck him out. It's like, "Oh."
Yeah, but
Don't sneak up at me, and we're trying to break into your shop to dispose your merchandise.
Yeah, he's doing a good job, but yeah, he kind of goes about talking about the age of wars. I mean, like, this community seems pretty well done by, but obviously he does make excellent killing weapons, which doesn't make him feel too good about the whole situation.
He wants to make some kind of sword of mass destruction to act as the ultimate deterrent.
Yeah, he basically wants to make a fucking nuke of a sword, where so that I think he literally says when people see it, they'll be just like, "Oh fuck, I guess we shouldn't fight anymore."
Yeah,
yeah.
See a guy carrying a Manitsuna special, and I'm thinking, "Oh god, I don't want to tool around with this guy."
Yeah, don't mess with that guy. His sword is bigger than him.
Hmm. The door knows. Wait a minute, I can see. I can see everything I mean here. Why is that? And it's like, this place is surrounded by the masks of the guardian deities that they mentioned. So maybe they aren't at this at all, but wait a minute. When did we start talking backwards? It was back then when that mask fell out. I mean, it's kind of like rewinding, spooning to their previous bits of the episode. And then I started fucking talking backwards when I got mad at him and threw my mask at the wall, and then I wasn't wearing it, and then I started talking backwards. Oh, gosh, there's some kind of little...
It was basically when they kind of slighted the guardian deities by taking off the masks or dropping them, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, pimp is, as long as you're wearing the mask, you're under the impression that this imp, the minor jack, who won't be able to work his voodoo on you.
Yep, so they arrive at the... They get to the church on time before the wedding. And, the imp puts on a little bit of extra juju on it so that when Hyakumaru is trying to attack him, he ends up strangling Dororo, which is nasty.
Yeah.
He's taken aback by that afterwards when everything does work out fine, thank goodness, because the blacksmith just sneaks up on the demon and just plonks him on the head. Yeah. Again, very comedy.
It's like, what was that? That's kind of anticlimactic. Yeah, well...
Well, they kind of all be cool fights, I guess.
Wasn't all that stakes in the episode.
He just leaves its concussed body beside the statue of where it's being stepped on by one of the guardians, and it gets reabsorbed back into it.
Yeah. Who let it out? I don't know. Just get out sometimes.
One of them things.
It's like when you get like mice in your house, you just want to deal with it.
Yeah, the guy from the start of the episode manages to confess his feelings. I did like his thing when he kind of gives them their congratulations to their wedding, where he's just like, I always thought you'd make a beautiful bride. I always thought you'd make an ugly bride. I hope you're very happy together. He says very kind of angrily kind of thing.
I'm so glad you hurried up and got married already.
Something like that, yeah.
Looking at you. Yeah.
But obviously he gets to finally actually confess, since he can tell the truth now. And yeah. I presume they get married that day, since they got all the prep done for the wedding.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a little happy ending in the little hobo their way out of there, I guess.
Yeah. And the swords came. Swords came here.
They finally came. Oh, my God. Like magic.
Hooray. Yeah. This is an interesting little thing where, by not being able to say what they actually meant, they're able to say what they actually meant.
Yeah. And I think it's kind of showing that the kind of growth in the character is that, well, that Yakimaru not only can say things, but is able to express those kind of those complex levels of emotion now. And Dororo is kind of less, kind of kept to himself, that kind of thing, you know?
Just less.
They're more open about their feelings with each other, but in this case, we're going to flip that for comedy's sake. Yeah.
Just less abrasive with people. Like, Yakimaru came back and found Oro, so it was like, yeah, well, you came back for me, so you came back and stuck with me, so I'm going to stick with you. Whatever misunderstandings we get up to.
I'm guessing there isn't going to be too many wacky hijinks episodes left after.
Yeah, not too much.
It seems to be kind of building to the thing, but
just gonna scare him out while I can. I'm getting some good comedy of Yakimaru as well.
Like, as a straight man, he works pretty good. I gotta give him that, yeah.
Like he doesn't know, like he knows he's not saying what he means, but he's not able to convey that. He's trying to, but he doesn't really have, like, the nuance to be able to do that.
Like, yeah, Dororo's doing the very thing of saying the opposite of what he means, and then, like, reacting to it, like, what did I say? You know. Whereas Yakimaru's just saying it straight-faced, and it's really kind of funny, just the dry delivery.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah, I'd be kind of interested to see if this is like a chapter that's just out of comic, because it does seem like the most sort of gags going on.
Well, in one fucking scene, like, the drawer, like, has the pig face, and one of those little pig fucking things drops. Like, yeah, I think there was absolutely fucking a Tezuka thing. If not, they were definitely going for that kind of slapstick that he likes.
Yeah, it's nice, as you say. Probably a good moment to take a breather before it delves into probably some unrelenting darkness and tragedy to finish out the series.
Sure.
But okay. We'll see what they do. Alright.
Next up is One Punch Man, Season 2, Episode 7, Class S Heroes. Where we get the end of the tournament.
Okay.
Who named these episodes? Dear.
It was about Class S Heroes, wasn't it?
It was. That did come up in it. And obviously you have the level of difference between a Class S and a Class A. A bunch of Class A's do not add up to one Class S, basically.
Yeah. So almost this again, this isn't like the final fight with Suryu. There was like other bits in between, yeah?
There's a bunch of heroes being initially rescued by oh crap, what's his name? Something Quick, Speedy Sam. No, that's not it. The guy with the sword.
The guy with the sword, Flashy Flash.
Flashy Flash. Okay, yeah. Okay.
Yes, Flashy Flash. Guy with sword, Flashy Flash. Yeah.
And then Flashy Flash. He doesn't get rescued. He gets the victory taken out from underneath him by a terrible tornado who just comes in to kill the monster and scold everyone.
Oh, yeah. Was this, I think this is what, like, the big multi-eyed octopus that you can catch in my direction? Yeah.
She crushes it into, like, a little, I assume, like, an octopus ball is basically the joke.
Yeah. Really gross was they had to cut out all its eyes.
Yeah, pretty nasty. What's his weak spot? All of those.
Well, this is the one where they have, Death Gatling in there as well.
Yeah, like he's lamenting that his bullets didn't do any damage to it. It just sort of shot it in the wounds that Flashy Flash made.
I just remember him as being, come up again, but he's just this, total extreme dude. I got a Gatling gun for an arm and I'm all scared up.
He seems like the kind of, like, and no offense, he seems like the kind of hero I'd be really into when I was, like, a teenager or a little kid.
Yeah. Death Gatling is like a no-nonsense mercenary who learned his trade in the battlefield, and it's only by the grace of God that he's decided to use his powers for good.
I could see him in, like, a Rob Liefeld thing, you know, like a Blood Death or Kill Warriors or Blood Bloods, you know, those kind of guys.
The Death Face.
Yeah.
Blood Kill, you know, Bone Squad, Bloodstorm, Bone Storm, I don't know.
He'd do well there.
Gatling or go to hell.
In this, he has to kind of like look at himself and go like, Jesus, there's a fucking world of difference between me and a Class S. You know, he actually has to have some introspection. So, yeah, fun looking character. I would like to see more of him. And you get a similar parallel, obviously, with the heroes fighting the monster invasion by the Monster Society and the fighting tournament where my brain keeps calling him Yamcha.
Yamcha? What?
I don't know why, because he's a martial arts guy and he's going to get his ass handed to him. Is that why? our main rival for
the top dude, Suryu.
Suryu, yes. Where basically, yeah, he's talking down all the S rank, or sorry, the A rank guys, because there's no one S class in the tournament. Well, by definition, I guess. But and the two A guys he thought were, they're no great chops, and being a hero isn't that great. And he's just basically biding his time until he gets to fight Taranko.
Yes, Taranko, that powerful fighter.
I still love the way it does play out, the tournament thing, where we get the guy who's like, yes, I'm a sadistic guy and I like to torture my other fighters. I like to draw it out, you know, not to finish in one punch like you do. I'm actually evolved from like this lineage of perfect, we've been gene selected to be the perfect human and all this fucking, he's got a rich backstory, but yeah, he gets taken out.
Yeah.
Like very easily. I love the fact they're still doing fighting tournament with this, even though it's like, yeah, and then he's going to get punched once.
You've seen all this before in literally some of the other comics and TV shows, but it's still fun. Let's see what plays out here.
Let's see what he does against One Punch Man, the man who defeats everyone in one punch. But didn't do well.
It's just like yawning as he uppercuts him into the sky. He's like, oh, whatever.
That's a very long and detailed backstory, but don't have time though.
20 words or less.
But we do get the battle between inverted commas Taranko and Suryu, where Suryu is kind of like going like, I know you're the real fucking deal. I know that you're a cut above these heroes and stuff. Like what he's asking him, like, what your goal is with this. And Mike was like, my goal is to see what martial arts is all about. And he's like, okay, my goal is to be lazy and shit. And, you know, also heroes suck. And that's the thing that does set off Saitama. It's just like, whoa, 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 whoa. Don't knock heroes, dude.
Yeah. So Saitama might not like be that fussed about the ranking system either, but if they're, whatever rank there, they're out here, they're doing good work saving people, then...
Yeah, it's showing shots of, like, Mudden Rider and stuff like that, where it's like, listen, Mudden Rider isn't the toughest motherfucker ever, and he's not going to beat everyone, but he's putting his shit on the line, and he's trying to make the world a better place, so it's like...
He's got heart.
He's cool, he's a cool guy, we like him. Showing the other heroes and stuff, and it's like, well, I mean, like, even if, like, you know, none of them are as good as Saitama, it's still the fact that they're all trying, that Saitama respects. So yeah, that was a bit of his trigger that kind of put him into like nearly serious mode, not quite, because he's finally discovered the truth of martial arts from Suryu's crazy kicks that nearly knocked his wig off. Like that's the main threat for him in this fight. Like he's like, oh shit, that put the wind from his kick nearly knocked my wig off.
Yeah.
And
Suryu's like, wow, he's just barely dodging. He's just like,
and he's a really good fighter because he's keeping his head guarded. It's like he knows what to fucking do. Like he's like, you're the real deal, man. Saitama has figured out that martial arts is all about moving around real cool, like.
Yeah, it's like a fancier way of punching dudes.
It's not just about punching dudes, it's about punching dudes with style. And he's like, well, what if I did like a little spin before I punched him? And like on, like him just doing like a twirl like a fucking dad at a wedding, he manages to like hip knock the guy out of the ring, like, you know, like a Dragon Ball thing, slam him into the stands. But his wig falls off and he's disqualified because it's like, well, we just think it's Taranko's deep, dark secret is that he was bald. But they're like, we did say no headgear. So, you know, that's breaking the rules, disqualification.
But, man.
But Siryu is not letting it end there, jumps back in. I think Saitama is at... Wait, did he already blast his entire shirt off or was that after he knocked him out of the ring?
I don't know. It must have been when he knocked him out of the ring, I suppose.
Yeah.
I remember it in the comic.
He doesn't last particularly long with Saitama anyway, obviously.
No.
Even with the thing of like flipping the ring around, that was some cool effects, I gotta say. Kicks the ring in two, like makes it come up like a giant a paper folding in on itself, so like the floor is a wall and that kind of shit.
I just thought sandwich.
Yeah, like you're folding a sandwich.
Fold it up.
Okay, yeah, I can see that. Yeah, but really good effects, even though it's like, well, we know how this is going, but it's at least fun to watch it play out. So, at the end of it, he has to cope with the fact that, wait, I fucking lost? Because he technically won because the other guy was disqualified, but he did lose the fight. Saitama is running the fuck away after his pants fell down. Man, fucking Taranko's gonna have to put up with all this shit. Everyone's gonna go, is that your real hair, bud? And it's like, oh, watch out for your belt there, dude.
No.
Oh, he's gonna have to put up with that for fucking years now.
Presuming he ever gets out of the hospital. if he ever walks again.
Yeah, he should be fine. It was only his leg in a cast. He'll walk it off. But yeah, in the meantime, we get I think that's post-credits thing. We get our boy Genos waking up going like, oh shit, that monster was a threat level demon, I fucking think, wasn't it? Or was it dragon? Whatever, one of the high ones anyway.
I think it's tiger, demon, then dragon is
yeah.
Like, dragon is like second from worst. Worst.
Oh, it's dragon and then like god or something, isn't it?
Yeah.
So yeah, this dude walking towards the fighting tournament is dragon level. And he's the real deal because he took out Genos very quickly. So quickly we didn't even see it.
Yeah. Also, he's a giant monster man, but he's wearing a karate gi, so you know he's got the moves.
Yeah. Oh, he's got the four eyes across his head as well, yeah.
An ugly dude.
Yes.
Not to typify all monsters being ugly or anything like that, but yeah, this guy looks pretty gross looking.
He looks monstrous. How about
very
that?
Ogre-ish.
Yeah. there was some nice animation in this one, mostly like the stuff with the messing around with the ring in the fighting tournament, but nothing that's standard. I'm kind of used to it at this stage. It ain't gonna reach Senpai's again.
Yeah, but the material is still coming through. Suyu is like similarly kind of dismissive of the ranking system as well, because thinking, oh, I have ranks and things, they aren't like indicative of actual ability. It could be this kind of guy climbing the ladder. We started reading it like as too much into the, oh, well, the whole hero thing is absolutely just fucking, it's just complete nonsense. It doesn't have any kind of meaning or kind of use. But
it's like the reason he became the strongest martial artist is so he wouldn't have to work for a living, so he could live a fucking easy life. The reason he's doing the tournament is to win the prize money and maybe meet that guy from last year, but, you know, prize money's good.
Yeah.
He's basically like an inverse but related Saitama. It's like he wants to be a martial artist for fun, for the fun of not having to be a martial artist. Yeah.
But there's no end or cause to it.
The end cause is to just fucking live a life of leisure. Yeah,
which Saitama does have it, if he wanted to be strong so he could be a hero and help people. They got too strong, and he only thing he knows to do to help people is just to punch monsters, but then it doesn't seem to get him a lot of cred sometimes. Except when he kind of comes through. But he doesn't have this, I guess, cynical view of heroes as being sort of just another fucking... They're a kind of system of of the man of authority or
yeah.
Do they do any real good work, or are just kind of bogged down in wanting to grace their rankings or when I satisfy don't, but what set time I was thinking, no, director, whatever your part of the system, I think I probably agree with a lot of them that the way it's set up isn't the right way, it's the most efficient way to get some good work done, but there are good people working within it nonetheless.
Yeah, I mean, like, even when it like cuts to Lightning Max and Snick, like Lightning Max is obviously, like, you know, he uses gadgets and stuff, but he wanted to be a better martial artist sort of thing, so that's why he entered the tournament in order to try and get better. And Snick, yeah, sure, he thought maybe if he could go up the ranking system, that'd be great, but obviously he's a guy who also does hero stuff to try and better himself. That's part of why he's doing this. So like, even these guys we see got taken out, and it's like, your man's very dismissive of these guys. Are okay, they're trying.
Yeah, and they'll kind of come to a very fine point in the next episode as well, because Sui Ryu thinks, oh, well, I'm so strong, I don't need heroes. He's going to need heroes in spite of himself.
Well, he's going to need them in a few minutes when that guy arrives. Yeah, sure.
Everyone needs a little help sometimes. No one is above everything.
Well, except maybe Saitama.
Yeah, but even he needs help from paying the rent, so he's got Genos in there.
That's true. Yeah, yeah.
As strong as I am, the one thing I cannot defeat is keeping my rent at a sensible level year on year.
Well, that needs the dishes, like, so, you know, works out pretty handy.
Yeah. Yes.
Next up, we have... oh, God, I'm doing Karakuri Circus on my own. Scary thought.
Well, I can't help you here. you're beyond any aid I can offer here.
It's just mostly remembering the names is the thing. Like, not a crazy amount happens this episode. We got they've sent... oh, my God. Remember anyone's name, me? They've sent Narumi and Eleonore to the top of the train because they need to go figure out... read the instruction manual on how to fly the space shuttle. While they're doing this thing, and the two puppets went with them because, you know, they want to protect Eleonore. That's what they're programmed to do. So we're kind of hanging out with the members of the circus who we haven't really gotten to know that well. So I guess now is a great, good time as any, as they're sitting in the back of the train. So we got, also we got the little kid, Masaru, like catching up on his broomstick. But a couple of the puppet who thinks he's a human has survived, and four other puppets have survived from the, like, 3,000 that got killed in the last one. Like a giant spider woman, like, you know, she's in a frocky dress but has spider legs underneath. A Calamity Jane puppet with four arms, and two, like, flying puppets that are going to carry them to the train. Unfortunately, one of the flying puppets tries to fight Masaru and gets his ass killed. The spider lady, I guess, has to walk. But she seems pretty quick, so she'll catch up soon, I assume. But Calamity Jane gets ahead of him.
Is Masaru possessed at this stage?
No, he's not possessed. The puppets were also confused by that. Apparently they weren't fucking let in on the plan, because they assumed he'd be in space and also their master. But, yeah, he's heading towards the train to try and save, try and get to space to, I guess, get to convince your man to, you know, stop his evil plan, I guess. No, he's not possessed. I think he's done with pretending to be possessed as well. That's not a thing anymore.
Okay.
Trying to keep track of it. So yeah, he's trying to catch up to the plane. Calamity Jane is going to arrive to the train, this one, and the Spider Woman isn't going to arrive, I guess, until next episode or so. Anyway, on the train, we have a chance to get the circus's backstory, guys. So the two acrobat kids, whose names I've forgotten, because why would I remember them? They give their tragic backstory. They were, I think they were adopted. Or they took them out of a foster care kind of thing. The ringmaster and his wife, took care of them. And it was only supposed to be like a, what do you call it when you're temporarily housed, as a kid?
Foster parents?
I think foster parent is more a more permanent thing. But basically, I think they were in those kind of conditions where it was supposed to be a temporary thing, because the mother kept insisting. It's like, no, don't call me mother. But, you know, she was super pleased anytime they called her ma'am or something like that.
Yeah.
But she was like, you know, because I don't want them leaving home and crying for me kind of thing, and calling me mother then, because that would break my heart kind of thing. And their tragic childhood backstories of when they finally realized that this woman was actually their mother. I'm trying to remember which one's which. The blonde one had, what was the fucking blonde one's deal? He broke her favorite vase and, or vase, I don't fucking care. And he tried to run away from the circus and she just held on to him tight. And it was kind of like, you know, a vase can be replaced. Don't worry about it, but I can't replace you. You're irreplaceable. You know, you can just get a new fucking vase. It's fine. And then he was like, oh, fuck. Okay. I matter more than material things. I matter to her, that kind of thing. And the other guy kept losing at marbles in school. But he trained with his mother, even like when she was like in her circus uniform. She was a tightrope artist, tightrope walker. I don't really know the term. And yeah, even in uniform, she's helping him train at marbles. So that one way he won it big and she was so pleased with him and she was his real man. However, one tragic day, as the circus master says, and I was like, I didn't see the man, and I was like, okay, this is some tragedy. Like, and it's kind of like, to be mean, it was kind of dumb. Basically, she had a mad fever, but she's like, the show must go on. I have to still do the tightrope walking. And they were talking about, wow, she looked really great up there, but, you know, the fever got to her too much. She slipped, smacked into the ground. It was one of those without a neck kind of things. And she's like, okay, everyone needs to, you need to cart me off and continue the show. Show must go on. The two kids want to go with their mother in the ambulance. And she's like, no, you guys got to do the unicycle act at the end. Got to keep the show up so the audience doesn't get worried, kind of thing. And they never saw her again. She died in hospital.
Then two faces waiting in the wings where Tommy gone.
I was, it's circus and tragedy, man. I can't help but think Batman. That's just the way of it.
Yeah.
yeah. And again, tightrope fucking act. Like that's, my stuff for uniform was like, wait, is she going to die in the trapeze? And these guys are both Robin. But no, not quite. They kind of know that way, and one talks over her backstory because she's actually quite comfortable on this train because her circus used to move on a train, and she talks about her brother, and she's like, "Oh no, I'm in the same boat as you guys. My brother died," but she's obviously talking. He died from Xanatha related illness, but still pretty nasty. She had to become an assassin to make enough money to pay the bills, that kind of thing. And they were going to do the Wild West knife show together, but that was their dream. They never can achieve it. Oh no, we're being attacked by a puppet.
It's the famous Wild West knife show. Knives being like the primary instrument used to try and tame the Wild West of the old frontier.
You know how it is in the Wild West. You have a shooty guy, you have boxing guy, you have knife guy. Wait, is there one I'm forgetting? Card shark, I guess, maybe? I don't know.
Like
those would be the builds.
Steamboat gambler, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Those would be the builds if you were doing like an RPG of them, basically.
Irish Undertaker. Probably drunk.
Oh, you're multi-classing there. But anyway, yeah, Calamity Jane shows up in her flying puppet. She's got like four arms and two of them have guns, but she keeps insisting she's better at knife throwing, so... And she's like loudly announcing this, that it's just like, yes, I toured all over America shooting Americans with my Xanatha bullets in America. And she's like, oh, you're the one, you're like my perfect enemy because you're like a Wild West themed puppet that shot Americans and I'm American and you probably shot my brother. You shot my brother kind of thing. I don't know. You know, it's Wild West. So Calamity Jane's shooting up the train, but the knife thrower pops out in a fucking Gatling gun that popped out of the train. I guess it's a more trick train than I thought it was. That gets exploded to shit and she pulls a knife on her even though she's all bloodied up and everything. She's like, I gotta make a shot. What is it I have to do? I can't remember. You know, she's probably shell shocked from the huge explosion she was just sitting on. She sees Masaru kind of come. He manages to catch up to the train and Masaru reminds her of her brother and she's like, I gotta hit the apple off his head like I tried to do just before he died with the knife. And wouldn't you know it, this puppet has like a nut, has an apple symbol on her forehead. It's like just very, very useful that. And Calamity Jane's
really
happy.
Relax, Apple computers, you know, this public consideration furnished by Apple Corporation.
Calamity Jane's happy to do the old knife Mexican standoff kind of thing. Because she's like, oh, brilliant, I'm even better at knives. And it kind of does the cut. They both throw their knives. The knives pass each other. Our knife thrower gets a knife straight into the forehead and falls off the train. Masaru like crying after it, but the puppet kind of going like, ah, I got you, motherfucker. I told you I was really good at knives. Oh, wait, is that a knife that is in my forehead right now? I forgot to establish earlier. She passed out the knives among the circus. So they all at least have a knife each. And the knife is infected with, with Eleonore's blood from that time way, 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 way back. Remember when she stabbed her up with like all of her knives? Yeah, her knives are poisonous to puppets now. I forgot to mention that. So this puppet instantly
saved
dies.
All those knives from before. Didn't even clean them. Oh,
I know, it's nasty, right? After all this time, you didn't clean the knives.
Ugh. Like where about? I take it now as like evil alchemical puppets. Yeah. With no one to do it. But no, someone would get like fucking hepatitis or off a cut off of that thing.
I don't know. At least you want to watch. You want to clean your knives just for fucking tetanus. So
get some kind of fucking blood infection. You know, she won't even like stab you to death. She'll just like kind of just nick you, like, you know, just like dig it in really hard, and it's just like
you'll die in 14 days.
And watch you die.
Die
14 days without like, you know, ongoing mega treatment. In which case you might live for, I don't know, a number of years.
I guess that's the episode. I'm not sure if she's dead now. I mean, like, she didn't have a knife in her forehead when she fell off a train.
Was it some kind of trick knife where it collapsed into the handle?
Well, it was the puppet throwing it, and I don't think the puppet's gonna. I think the puppet's probably gonna play for keeps.
I don't know. They're capricious. They could do it all to put on a better show.
I've seen people die under shittier circumstances than this show so far, so it wouldn't surprise me. So
well, I'll see you guys come back to life.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. So I guess we'll see. But yeah, that's pretty much the episode.
Crazy as always.
If you'd established any of this shit with his characters beforehand, like if you've given me their tragic backstories, maybe they did fucking only say that on the train, but I doubt it. They probably said it during the circus part of the show that was not included in this show. Anyway.
That's something
I need to go back on. Sorry, go on.
That's like go on.
No, but speaking of things, I need to go back on and watch the original part so I get the context. I say we could move on to the next thing.
This equally is wacky. Wacky TV, season 2. Even though I got a pretty good idea of what's going on.
I'm enjoying this so much. I want to see more, basically. And there's a whole fucking season there for me.
Episode 7, a fixed price on demand TV, foreign TV, even. essentially the thing, because we have. I think this one is Nanazawa.
The green haired dude, yeah.
It was helped out by a helpful mouse there last episode, and got to guide them around and show Nanazawa where a treasure is. In exchange for a few more showbiz tidbits, meet the mouse friend. Like, oh, that's my friend.
The mouse friend named Mouse.
Okay.
I love the man's reaction. What? Seriously? Her name is Mouse? That's okay. Like, yeah, he's very dismissive initially. It's like, come on, dude, let's, I mean, like, and initially he's like, yeah, go with her, you know, hang out with her kind of thing. Like, but then it's like she convinces him, it's what turns him against her, is that she has, I guess, like fucking Amazon or Amazon Prime or fucking Netflix.
She's got like
or something.
A foreign TV streaming package.
And she's got all the banana related pun shows.
She's got Breaking Banana. She's got Seven. She's got. Not Fargo. Nango? I don't know.
Yeah. I've forgotten half the puns now because she's just scrolling through her phone with all the things, talking about the latest prices. And that's the thing that really fucking gets them. It's like, oh, he's just fucking local TV, man. They barely have a fucking budget. They're not really a big deal. He's like, hey, whoa, hey now. And then he's trying to draw your man back to his side of the force, I guess. It's like, hey, come on, you want to hear me some trendy things? I'll get you some vouchers for taxis, even though I stated that's not a thing anymore.
I think we're going to go watch the latest season of Game of Bananas up in here. But a plane for all the bananas. What's in? No, what the fuck? No, the fuck was that? Fucking foreign TV. What fun foreign TV for? Fun. It's all the fun same shit. When they say there were always so many fun seasons of it, it was all this fun same thing that's repeated over and over, cycled over and over again.
They go to prison. They escape the prison. There's more zombies. Whatever. Who fucking cares, man? And the lads pop through a wall and meet him. And it's just like, should we just fucking leave him talking into that pipe?
What's he doing over there? I don't know. Oh, he's going on again about the HBO. Oh, God. He's going to be a while. Let's just leave him do it.
again, like this, it's not that the jokes are particularly clever, just the delivery is very good.
It's just that kind of that naturalistic way of acting, which kind of all of them do. If it was more like just, a sketch comedy troupe. this having their thing animated rather than being an anime sketch show. This seems like, you know, a sketch comedy thing that's been turned into a cartoon, but it's left the kind of feeling and the flow of it intact.
Yeah, it works pretty well for it. Again, nice short one. I'm still fucking demanding my Bonobono, but you know, whatever.
Yeah. Look, I like it. It's even though you may have exact and precise insight into how TV Tokyo works or how everything on telly works in Japan, just looking at people who work in the industry have got a lot of thoughts maybe about how it's run, and we're seeing a little bit of it here. Is it especially on fucking TV Tokyo, things seems to be a lot of jibes, a lot of fucking little ribbing going on of them. But they seem to be good sports about it because they keep putting out stuff like this. So
they can laugh at themselves at least, or at least let this thing do it for them. It's a nice little look at it from an outsider perspective. But I'm guessing people who are in the industry fucking love this show, man.
Maybe.
I'm guessing they get the fucking jokes. Like, if someone comes up to you, it's like, wow, you're in showbiz? It's like, yeah, but it's not really that big a deal. Until they bring up foreign TV. And it's like, whoa, hang on. I am a big deal. We're in my small pond.
You might not be able to meet fucking your David Simons or your fucking, or your Sarah Jessica Parker or what have you, but, you know, I actually work in TV. I carry the camera.
dear.
Anyhow, away from that nonsense to a different kind of nonsense.
Sarah Zenmai, episode 7, I want to connect, but I want to betray. For some reason it didn't peg me what was actually happening here. I should have figured it out, but the reveal, our boy, he's got his smile back. His smile before shit went down.
Oh yeah. Kazuki is like, oh, he's back to how it was going. It seems to be like a much more outgoing, less hung up about.
He's not looking at the fortune thing anymore. He's trying to make connections with people he knows, and his little brother's like, does that mean me and mom and dad? It's like, yep, you guys first.
Yeah. I'm like, you know,
none of this online fucking friends thing. I'm going to stick with people I know first.
Yeah, I pushed this like kind of way out to the sides, way away from where I got the one makeup for last time.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be kind of cool hanging out with the boys as well. I'm going to be an enter. Hey, want to get my footy? Yeah, sure. Sounds great. Go and do it. Hey, Tori, crossing the bridge. Welcome down. Play a bit of footy with us too. It's like, yeah, okay. He seems happy. Okay, I'll go down.
He's got some skills on the ball as well. Yeah.
Do you play, dude? Yeah, a little, you know. And there's like, kind of, things are going awfully well for them. They've got their own little spot, like, down beside the bridge, where if they can play football away. Like, things are going too well. You're kind of waiting, how is things going to go wrong, then? Because it's almost summer holidays. It's like,
they're going to spend the summer holidays training and, to be like a magnificent trio at football, and they might get further in the league and that kind of shit. So I was like, yeah, it is going far too well.
Yeah. On the other end of it, we had like,
yes.
Which from his witch. Mabu,
sure.
Who is the other cop with the glasses, seems to be going in for a clandestine meeting, probably for some more tune-ups or whatever else he's needing himself. Which he feels very conflicted about, because he feels, what's it? What's the other guy called? The other cop. it doesn't feel like he's being quite honest with him, but, it's kind of shadowy figure, whatever it is. It's like, you know, chief otter scientist of the otter kingdom, otter empire.
Oh crap, what was the pun they used? It was pretty good.
It's utterly ridiculous. Well, you know how it is. Utterly ridiculous. I mean, it's throwing puns to you all the time as well, because an otter is Kawa Uso, but then an Uso is Lie, so they're constantly trying to making little quips about how the otters are deceptive or always speaking in lies or double talk.
I'm telling you one thing you want to hear. So they seem to be selling it to the glasses guy that he will be able to reconnect with this person he's lost, but for the other guy, he is rejecting this form because he knows it's not truly the person he lost. He's trying to work back towards that.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't have his, it doesn't have his partner's soul or something like that, I guess is the term.
Well, he has an artificial heart.
Yeah.
But in literal sense, where he has, I guess he was, like, mortally injured and they needed to get some kind of transplant in there. But if it fits his personality, he's lost his figurative heart, he's, that isn't the same guy anymore. But he keeps going in, both getting kind of tune-ups, enhancements, and tweaks to kind of get him more back on, but it's never quite worked. He comes in saying, oh, it's me again, you know, they've replicated my personality perfectly in this body. It's all mine. It's totally me, man. It's like, no, it's not fucking you. It's all lies. It's all fucking fucked up.
Yeah, they're eating breakfast or whatever, and he's like, oh, I got an upgrade so I can actually eat now. And he's like, oh, yeah, you're just going to fake it, huh? You fake. You're a fake. That kind of
just
thing.
Just go into the emotions.
Yep.
which makes it even more of like, this is like a married couple who are drifting apart.
Yeah, very much so. Because obviously one wants to make that reconnection, but the other one feels like the connection is lost and is trying to figure out how to remake it. But they're coming from a place of exceptional emotionality in terms of Rayo is the other cop.
He's thinking
that he's getting angry at the other guy. He's wishing that there was that same spark, whereas the other guy can't seem to find that same spark in himself. So, they both want this thing that they had back, but, and I'm guessing it's, again, the utter lie thing. It's oh God, was that a pun? Both of them have been lied to. It's like, dudes, you're together again. What's the fucking problem? They think they've lost connection, but they actually haven't or something like that. I'm guessing it's something along those lines.
Well, they're both, like Mabu is alive, but, is it quite the same? Like sometimes dead is better. That kind of a job.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, maybe it's the fact that they want things back the way it was the same, but things are different, and you can still have a connection even though things are different now. That kind of way.
Yeah, maybe, but it's the same as it was, and I can't accept that, because...
Yes.
This is how it should be. It doesn't feel right. You're not the man I married. You aren't the man I fell in love with.
Yeah.
Which again would definitely lends more credence to the prequel manga where they adopt Sarah. It definitely sounds like they just got a kid together to try and patch this over, but it didn't quite take.
Yeah, or maybe they both have maybe not empty nest syndrome, but the fact that they're not raising a kid together has changed the relationship somewhat. Something along those lines, maybe. I mean, like, I'm not actually sure if that thing is a prequel now, or is it just like we've reworked the plot of this completely.
I don't know. So, again, just gotta try and sit down and read the thing, or I'll get it somewhere. Maybe we could better to wait till after this is finished and then look at it and cast any new bit of it, because I don't want to kind of maybe coloring my
your interpretation
of what I'm getting here.
That's fair.
But an interesting kind of little dynamic there. This relationship that's kind of broken down, and how the connections of that are kind of left dangling or lingering or trying to maintain them, but it's kind of being artificially done. Kind of like what they're doing as well.
Into
their activities in the city.
And it's also like to give us the full extent of the relationship in this episode is obviously shown in contrast to the kids who are becoming more friendly with each other. They're more open. The guy's like before he started closing himself off. Enta's more like that. Sorry, not Enta. Kazuki is more like he used to be, more happy-go-lucky and that kind of thing. Enta's happy that he's happy. Toy is kind of like opening himself up and that he's allowing himself to hang out with these guys. So it's kind of like they're coming together is a dark mirror is the cops kind of like their relationship moving apart. But even as they're practicing soccer, wouldn't you know it, someone's messed up their place. They've thrown paint everywhere and rubbish all over the place right in their spot, which is a... It seems I think at that stage Toy is like someone's fucking with us, or maybe it was the next time.
Well, we know as well that Ryo, he is, or Rayo, he's pinpointed, based on the incidents previously where these cabins have turned up to take out or cap a zombie, that we're triangulated that the source of it and Kepi, who were after as well, is probably located Somewhere in this area.
It's basically like police things, yeah. You're putting in where all the related crimes are, and it's like, well, okay, it's like they all kind of like are around this hub, like which is the literal hub in town. So yeah, that kind of works.
Yeah. So when this shit starts happening, you think, oh fucking, he's trying to call him out. He's trying to call the boys out. So you can like, I don't know, maybe you could get a drop on them and bring in Kippy or something like that. You assume it's the cops behind it.
And this is Rayo, like, Rayo kidnapping his Kazuki's brother. So, yeah, you feel like they're kind of closing in on them. They don't let these people screwing with them get them down. They clean it up, and that's just part of their training. It's a good, fun montage.
It's like, let's do it. Let's clean up the streets. And they're putting the bins away and they're washing the paint down. It's like, oh, you're spraying with the hose. Oh,
a couple of wacky boys on a summer vacation. And it's like, well, it's still going. Yeah, pretty much.
Then and I'm going so it's to say, this is fun.
But even when they get back the next day, it is messed up again. And you're kind of like, oh, well, that's kind of fucked.
That's okay. We'll just clear it up again.
Nothing can ruin our friendship. And then Toy gets a call. It's his brother. Yeah, he's gotten involved in some shady shit. And as you know, it's criminal stuff. They're going to have to jump out of town. And he's not going to be able to help them out with the soccer team. But Kazuki says, it's like, don't worry about it, dude. I'll give you the 5 dishes. We're like 4 in, so we just need to get 1 more, and we can take a wish to get your brother's shit sorted. I assume like clear his name or something like that, or make it so that he didn't do the crime or whatever.
Something like that. We're like, yeah, that's cool. He's business of Enta's motivation. This is like, Atosh, you want to get dishes to, so you can, like, make Kazuki's like, desires come true, or wishes come true, and it's like, well, what he wants to do, what he desires to do is to help you with your brother. So if that's what his wish is, it's my wish as well. So it's
seems like gravy. Like everything's all good and all sorted. But when they go to check out the dishes, they've been stolen.
No, they're gone.
Kepi has detected that there was a there was an intruder. Oh, he's been hanging around with the with the fortune teller as well in the background.
With Sarah, yeah.
Doing the very important duty of identifying Kappa or Frog and putting stickers on which one is which.
Yeah, we're having a lovely day together. I guess a prince has found his princess and they're absconding, and maybe Kepi is neglecting his duties or his normally diligent level of oversight. And hence they got robbed.
Yeah, he didn't even finish his cucumber, so obviously he's distracted.
Yeah, but as well, he's getting complacent and not realizing that the net's drawn in ever tighter on him.
Yeah, and also is that the stage the Kappa zombie attacks, which is
a Kappa zombie.
It is a ball related one, just to mess with the soccer thing a little more.
Yeah, ball related one. Do the whole business, and that guy, he was a dude who wished he was a football so that his girlfriend would kick him around.
He was into S&M. He had a ball head with a ball gag. When he got the ball gag out, he was like, oh, I'm kind of like, oh my God, I got the gag out. Also, like, in his memory, he's like, you know, it's an S&M thing where she's kicking him in the nuts. But that wasn't good enough for him. He wanted to be kicked like a football. That was his deep, dark secret.
The fucking ball sack is kind of flowing, flapping in the wind.
Like, again, that's one of those things where it's like, that's not much of a crime. I mean, like, probably somewhere it is literally a crime. But, I mean, like, you know, consenting adults, whatever you do, it's fine. But obviously our cops aren't exactly the good guys here. Or not, at least not working for the good guys.
Well, the juicy bit is when you see the footage played back after it's Enta who gets to Shiro Kodama in.
Mm-hmm.
And we get a little playback of the shared memories there, and it's like, oh wait, no, you're not supposed to see all this.
And he was messing up their soccer place out of jealousy. He stole the plates, so to spite him, because this is the duo, my friend, not a fucking trio.
I kind of read it as well that, oh, we're going to, like, I'll mess up the fucking the area, and then we'll bond closer together, or I'll, like, artificially force this connection by fucking doing this.
Yeah. Like, it would ruin one connection and strengthen the bond that he wanted, but strengthened. Yeah, sure. But obviously the place thing was kind of like, well, I don't fucking like this guy. Like I said, he wants a relationship with the other boy. He doesn't want this third boy coming in and being a third wheel. Yeah.
No. Yeah.
It kind of leaves us on a cliffhanger there, I think, for the most part, yeah.
It's just kind of a shitty, because it's like, you knew it was going too well.
Yeah.
It's only episode 7 in the series, so I thought, nah, I'm sort of fuck it up now. And it's all those nice moments from before, from earlier, when they were just getting on so well together, it's all just completely fucking fake. I thought, like, thought you were, like, getting somewhere. If you've gotten somewhere with one of the boys, now... One of them. This little shit is going to fucking drag it all back again.
He's really bugging me. But, I mean, like, they did turn me around on Kazuki, I got to say. Like, he has had growth now, so I'm guessing we're going to go through each of them to give them that kind of growth. Yeah. It's not enough for Kazuki to return to his former happy state. It has to happen for everyone.
Yeah. It's just... I kind of like that, too, or... Like... Bonds of friendship are a very important thing here, but and it's a very cliche thing in a lot of anime series as well.
Yeah, definitely.
But it is saying like, you know, like, friendship isn't just like very cut and dry concept to everybody, and the levels and the natures of them, they change from person to person. So that connection, it could be different, it could mean something to different people, and some folks might want to jealously guard theirs away from others. They don't want horning in on it because they see it as something special and unique to them, and they don't want to do that in spite of themselves.
It's fun to see as well. Like, again, it's very, like, very shown in a lot of ways, but a very Kamen Rider and that kind of thing, where it follows exactly the same format and that kind of thing. And about bonds of friendship and the bonds we have with other people. But it's talking also about not only do we have bonds with people, but also the lies we tell ourselves and each other, that kind of thing. And kind of breaking it down like that. So yeah, I'm really enjoying the very structured, very familiar format and themes of this show, and the way it's, the way it's recontextualizing those. Yeah.
Yeah. Just friendship is a more complicated concept than, like, years upon years of, very well-meaning and, well-intentioned things done in the past. But I have something like this that's going to illustrate or convey those things in kind of close to how that might actually play out in real life, where friendship isn't this like thing that, if we are friends, then we can overcome anything. But it's more like, we're friends because of,
we're friends because of circumstances, and sometimes circumstances also change, and sometimes you need to work through problems like that when the problems do occur, yeah.
Also, as well, I'm hanging around, you know, I might say I'm like your friend, but I'm also kind of in love with you, but I'm not going to tell you that, though.
Yeah, complications, like I said. And I mean, that's not even a new thing. That's an old thing with their friendship. And trying to get to know new people who have done bad things but aren't bad people. Yeah, there's it's definitely talking about a lot of stuff, and I'm in for what it's saying.
Yeah. Also, there's a post credits bit with with Mabu and Ryo. I just watched it today. I've always forgotten how it went.
It's basically like when they were, because you see them in their recuperation thing after the war with the otter doctor. But this is thing when they're in their police uniforms, and it's basically them being sent on their mission.
That was it, yeah. I was hazy on where it actually took place in time.
Yeah.
Mabu's alive, but he's not really alive, and
he's missing. He has a mechanical heart, but we will replace it if you work for us. That kind of thing. We'll restore him back to what he is, because they also want the dishes, I assume, to make the wish of bring your man back the way he used to be. I think that's a lot of it as well. People want to be, like Toy wants to go back to the life he had before his life really went down the shitter. Enta wants this lie where it's like, we're totally friends. And not that he's in love with his friend, because that kind of complicates things.
Well, they were friends before.
But he had deeper feelings, but he wants to get back to that stage where he doesn't want to come out and confess. He doesn't want to try and do anything with his feelings. He wants it just to be like this state of, I just get to hang around the guy I love. That's fine.
Mm.
Which isn't good enough, really. But yeah, that's something he's going to have to learn.
It's just, you know, you're not growing. It's why you're constantly like regress back. So you're going to just trash our football playing spot, and you're going to put all this other bullshit to try and like engineer to go back. But it can't go back that way because the dynamics have changed. One thing, Kazuki doesn't feel that way anymore. Like, it's not that he's gone back to the way he used to be. It's just he's back to being happy and contented himself again.
He's happy in his life now as it is.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, even had the conversation with his little brother where he said to his little brother, no, you hang on to the mother's scent packet thing, because he's like, he wants to make those connections with the people in his life right now. Which is a mature decision. It's sensible. You can see the growth in him already. Yeah.
And Enter just completely misreading it.
Yes.
Back to how they used to fun and say, no, we're back in a good, we're in a good place now, but isn't the same place as well. Also Toy is here and he's also our friend, so
yeah.
Maybe we should include him in this stuff as well.
He helped me try and kidnap someone, so I mean, like, we cool. dear.
Yeah, continues to be insightful and incisive, and it's forward to every week.
Just curious as to where this particular one's going. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, if you want for more bits of the puzzle, they haven't gotten like the full picture of it yet.
Yeah, sure.
Like the whole kind of Kepi and Sarah thing. I wonder how is that going to affect things as well?
The other thing we get in the coda at the end is the thing the otters have captured, and it's just saying like darkness or something like that. It's like eyes that look very much like Kepi's or something.
It's Kepi shaped, certainly.
Yeah, yeah. And we know he's amorphous, so who knows what it is exactly.
And in a previous post credits flashback thing, we saw somebody who may or may not have been Kepi in a previous existence or previous life or previous place this thing unleashed out of themselves.
So is this like a secret of himself, two parts of the whole, something like that? Yeah, we got a lot of shit to cover, not only with our own character's personal growth, but with the overarching plot, yeah.
Mm, maybe like getting separated from that is what left him in his Kappa form.
Right. Because I guess even our main characters could obviously have a Kappa form and a human form, so what we saw before maybe is human form, yeah.
Yeah, and Sarah can jump between either. As we have seen, so
yeah, she's more whole or something, sure,
or something like that. Yeah,
yeah, no, there's a lot to figure out, and I'm more interested in the character's personal growth than the overarching plot. But yeah, still continues to be good.
It's pretty great. Let's see. Well, that was great. Also, very very cathartic, very, as they say in the parents nowadays, very wholesome. It was Fruits Basket.
Yeah.
Episode 8.
It was like,
see you when you get back.
It was like a sad thing, but it resolves nicely, so it's kind of like, oh, thank goodness. It's New Year's, and the Soma family are talking about heading back to the fucking house for the holidays. Yeah.
Obviously very important, you know, well, New Year's, especially in one thing in Japan.
Because, sure.
You know, that's kind of what's
it's a family holiday, yeah.
That's kind of their big holiday. And also, because seeing as he's all like zodiac-related, zodiac-related folks, even though this isn't quite Chinese New Year yet, but it's still because it's going to turn over into a new year.
But New Year things do mean a lot to them when
it's a big deal.
Yeah, to things that involve like the changing of the year, it determines what animal you are and that kind of shit. Yeah, it's going to mean a lot more to them.
Everett's family only, which means that Toru will left by a lonesome over the New Year's break.
And she insisted that she didn't want to interfere with her two friends who kept inviting her over, but she was like, yeah, you know what, you guys go be with your families. And even when she convinces the two Soma guys, obviously the dog guy's happy enough to go, but the other two guys are like, fuck that. And Catboy's like, I don't even fucking get invited, it's bullshit.
Yeah. And Yuki's like, I spent all my time trying to get out of that house. I don't want to go back to it if I can help it.
But she kind of convinces them because the way she's saying is like, well, I mean, like, you'll get to see your mom and you'll get to hang out with your family, which is like, and they can see it from her point of view. She doesn't have her family anymore. Her grandpa should have gone to Hawaii for the fucking thing. Because of course they have. What a shitty family. But you know, fuck it. She didn't get to be with her father or mother anymore. So, she kind of convinces them, is like, well, take the time you have while you got it. And they're kind of like, yeah, okay. I mean, like, you're talking a lot of sense there. But you know, are you sure you're going to be okay by yourself? She's like, no, I'm grand.
I'll be grand. Don't worry about it. You guys go and I'll see you when you get back.
Yeah. And it's kind of like, as they're getting there, they get waylaid by, Hannah. I love the fact they're like, is she wearing a fucking black cape? Where the shit did she get that?
It's Hannah. It's Hannah.
Okay, I got the name right. All right.
Hannah Chan.
Sneaking up on them in the middle
Hannah
of
Jima, their... Hannah Jima, Saki, yeah, I think. Anyway, she's just there.
She sneaks up on them in the middle of their conversation, freaking them all out, because that's how she do. And she kind of like guilt trips them.
See, you guys are on going off to visit the family for New Year's, huh? Yeah, that's supposed to be nice for you. I feel even like a poor girl alone at home on New Year's, the same year that her only mother passes away, and she's just living in the streets and the front parts of that. Yeah, just leave her alone on the house with, like, no loved ones there, no living relatives to comfort her or be there for her in this time for family.
It's not like the dog guy wasn't playing with him beforehand, where he's like, you know, I think there was news of a creeper hanging around or something.
A burglar, a home invader, oh my gosh.
And he's just fucking, like, he's just toying with them because it's funny to him.
He's like, going, this is too easy. Too easy way. Too
I mean, like, he's obviously probably trying to convince them to fuck off as well, but, Hannah puts the final nails in the coffin and really drives the point home where it's like, you guys need to fuck off back there now. Because it was just Toru doing it for everyone else's benefit but herself. Smiling on the outside, but, suffering inside herself, that kind of thing. And even the dog guy goes like, you fucking planned this, didn't you? She's like, I don't have a fucking clue what you're talking about.
I'm just walking out in the streets, much like you were. Nothing at all.
There's no crime here, officer. So they're running home, like, to the point where they feel fucking ill. They just managed to catch her crying on her own.
Well,
but she claims it was the beautiful song performance on TV.
Yes, it was lovely. Now it's just she's there. She's looking at the picture of her mam, and she's all teary-eyed, isn't this? Well, for one thing, they're glad that Kea came back. They're right. They feel right decision to come back home because she's obviously taking this pretty hard right now. She could use someone to talk to her or be there for.
I did it the way they expressed this was not by saying that we're glad to be home. This is our home now. They just say I'm home. Kind of thing, and that's kind of confirms in Toru is like, yeah, this is your home. Your home is with these people. Yeah. This is your family now. Yeah.
Yeah. But also, they feel kind of weird that they kind of busted in her when she's having a private moment of contemplation about her season one.
But they're also glad they didn't let her have that private moment of sadness because it's like, okay, she's not going to be crying on her own. That's better.
Yeah.
Better than leaving her alone for New Year's. It worked out pretty good. She does get a call at New Year's, and I was really worried based off the other side of it that was going to be from the Soma estate. But it's just a friend checking up on her, so that's cool.
It's Uwo saying, "You okay?
You cool?
Let's try call checking and see if you're like an old New Year's. This it could be getting kind of difficult to hope you get no one around. No, actually, it's good. I got some people who came by. Are you sure? Do you want me to come over there? You want to come over here? And say, no, I'm all set here. We got everything we need to.
Yeah,
I feel I'm at home and. I'm doing grand. I'm
the
nice
fact that
she is
like, yeah, she's at home. She has a place that she can call home.
But
in the Soma estate, we meet, I've forgotten the new guy. He has the same name as the other guy, and they comment
There's
on
Haru.
Haru?
Haru's a young lad, and then Hattori was there, but like.
Yeah, Haru-kun and San.
Comes in, how are you, Hassan? How are you, Haru-kun? It's like, one. Which one of us are you referring to there?
No confusing nicknames, I think is the way they put it. And they're kind of like, oh, the lads haven't arrived. And it's like, yeah, I can fucking see why. Like, fuck this noise, because it's kind of suck. And he's kind of gloating. It's like, oh, you reap what you sow.
Akito, in having a little sulky little shit. I'm fucking happy to do. And you've seen the first glimpse of it there, that Shigure, no, he can be a bit of a messer, a bit of a wind-up merchant, but he's not always entirely sincere, honest in his dealings, and he's not always like the most decent guy, you know, doesn't always have the best of intentions at heart. Sometimes he just likes to just kind of fuck around and mess around like that.
But I mean, like, even in this episode, he was fucking with the guy's emotions, probably to try and convince them to, like, guys, you fucking skip the feast and fucking go home to Toru. Come on, what are you doing? Like, but, you know, doing it in a kind of cruel, fun for him way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, no, it's like this time, certainly, he's, you know, fun. Kind of gloating and get one over on somebody fucking deserves it, because that guy was an absolute fiend. But at the same time, yeah, he can have a mean streak to him, like in deference to his, you know, otherwise kind of affable persona.
His dog-like and, nature.
Yeah.
This dog can bite.
This dog can bite you if you give him the cause to. But don't need to worry about that. Because it's a new dawn of a new year, and Toru is looking forward to spending a whole new year with these lads.
Yep, they get up on the roof to watch the new dawn come in, and they're kind of like, and they're both happy to be there as well.
Yeah, and they feel the same way too.
Yeah.
It's probably like the first news is been a while they haven't spent in that dreary estate going, trying to put up with people who describe, you have to pretend to like or be civil to.
The fact that this is a celebration of good times, and to be thinking about, it's like, yeah, you know what? I'm looking forward to times are coming. Like, that's the kind of way they're looking at it. And
yeah, for the first time in a long time, perhaps.
Yeah, yeah. And even our cat guy can't keep in his enthusiasm. He's trying to play it cool the entire time. He's like, my New Year's wish is to beat up that fucking mouse. And your man's like, oh, yeah, good luck with that.
I wish you well in your endeavors.
Not too well. But yeah, it's nice. It's good, kind of, like you say, cathartic for the characters. Even though it's like, oh, there's a hint of sadness there, but narrowly avoided, I suppose. Yeah.
Well, things were sad, you know, and there's no getting over the fact that some, you know, we've had
bad times, sure.
Some tragedies in the past year, but you can't let them linger on forever. Well, like, take the time to remember those people, but don't forget to, like,
to look move forward
to life as well. Like, have some to look forward to and live for as well.
Yeah.
It's a whole new year, it's a whole new day, so it's what you make of it. And someone else's snow is turning over a new leaf himself. Well, Moore has a different outlook in life. Kind of the same dude. We're on the same kind of grips, but he's got a whole brand new attitude. It's the return of F. Scott Fitzgerald in Boongo Stray Dogs, episode 32, Fitzgerald Rising.
Yeah, we open with our armed detective agency hanging out in the coffee shop. Still more sexual tension between our were tiger and
Lucy Ma Montgomery.
Yes. I was kind of enjoying that, and the other one sitting there going like, he's going like, oh man, this coffee's great, and the other one goes like, it's mediocre at best. I was just like, oh, it's a three-way love thing now, that's what we're going for, is it? Sure. In some regard anyway, but yeah, what's been happening, one of our fallouts from the, this is called the organization, wasn't it?
The Guild,
thank you. Miss Alcott, Louisa May Alcott.
She's trying to find the boss, because she's not cut out for sort of crime, or she's not cut out to be the head of any kind of crime thing. But it's all she knows, but she needs someone to call the shots.
I guess we're in the shantytown that's built into that crater, which is the only related thing to that that fucking light novel thing we had to get through to get to all this good stuff. But, she's barely eking a survival there, and...
I know she's living there, but she's come here to seek, old boss F. Scott Fitzgerald, because he is, you know, just living on the streets. He's got nothing. He spent all of his money trying to punch somebody really hard in season two, but it didn't work, because they punched him even harder without using money. But now he's got nothing left.
He's begging for money, for power, on the streets. All he needs is maybe 50 cents, I don't know.
But she's trying to convince, we gotta get the guild back up running, Mr. Fitzgerald, please, for and say, no, it's all behind me. Fucking it wasn't worth it. I lost it all trying to find.
I gambled it all and I lost. Yeah.
Lost it all trying to bring my beloved back, and it didn't work out.
Yeah, and because she was like, "Oh, they said you couldn't survive a fall into the Yokohama harbor like that," but he kind of reveals it's like his love was the thing that saved him, because he activated his power to basically eat up his wedding ring in order to survive the impact. Mm. And I think he feels kind of shitty about that. It's like, well, God fucking damn it.
But it comes around to another way of thinking. Well, maybe that was like the last vestige of my beloved telling me to live on, to try and survive this and come out of it the other side.
That is the fact that he was married at all is the thing that saved him. Yeah.
Mm. And his resolve is renewed then when Miyako gets accosted by some local toughs. Actually, it's the same toughs who were who were thrown out of their, they're the guys who attacked the Amsterdam's favorite cafe and busted up, and then it just came down on them like a hammer.
Yeah, they're in the lowest of the low. They've hit on hard times, as we've seen how that happened. So they're like, okay, we know she was in that the guild, and where's the guild's assets and stuff? And she's like, yeah, they're all spent up, and even if I didn't know where the boss was, I wouldn't tell you, even though you're threatening to pull off my fingernails. And she's like held by a guy, and the guy threatens her with a gun, and I was like, if that goes through her head, it'll shoot the guy holding her. He'd be like, hey, dude, can you just like aim that to the side a little or something? I don't know. It was weird to me.
Just back of the head? I don't know.
But that spurs Mr. Fitzgerald into action, using all of his 50 cents that he manages to gather to lay that fucking dude out.
That's all he needs for a punk like this.
Yeah. And he's just like, if you want me to take care of these guys, you're going to have to give me everything you got on you. Every bit of money you have. Which, I mean, like, it puts on an impressive display, but Fitzgerald is kind of like, dude, you didn't have much money on you.
Well, it wasn't just to beat the guys up. It was also to go down to the tailors, get some brand new set of duds.
Oh, you can't run a grift without a new suit.
Old rags, and they got, I'm going to phone, start the bomb, work my way back up. Because I got a whole new outlook in here. Because I'm all about money. I want money because I need money to do my cool power for a start. But, you know, I'm just all about it. However, I can see that, you know, just breaking it willy-nilly fun, it won't get us nowhere. I haven't got that kind of luxury anymore. So I'm going to revive my criminal organization through the magic of being 50 and evading of couponing and flash sales supermarket. And by saving money like that, we will eventually build a criminal empire that will take over this entire city again.
We'll work our way from the bottom 50. Right to the top.
I bought this whole like a set of like of pots of sauces and kitchen pots. But this all is from the same pot. Yes, it was buy one get two free. It was a deal I couldn't pass up. This is the kind of thing you gotta be doing if you want to like be rebuilding an organization. You can't be avoiding to pass up opportunities like this.
And she's kind of like, I'm going to have to return that shit. He doesn't even fucking cook. Also, he thinks they're running the new business out of a fairly modest building, but no, they've only rented one room in that building. And he's kind of like, okay, while you're doing your thing, because your power needs to be activated in the room on your own, I'm just going to like basically ingratiate myself to the neighbors and just sit down and watch his TV. Which is great. Like, that guy didn't get to say anything. He's just like, what the fuck is this well-dressed dude? It's like, okay, I guess he's watching TV with me now.
It's just some fella in his underpants. Like, who's this?
This fancy man.
Are you the landlord? Am I in trouble?
But yeah, she just needs 3 minutes, because her power is she can, like, it's one, she can turn one, slow down time to like 1/1000 or something like that. Is this?
Yeah, but she needs to be in a room by herself to concentrate on it.
Yeah, and, like Fitzgerald says, oh, your power is like coming up with the crazy plans. It's just the fact that she can make enough time to make the plans once she has all the information gathered.
Yeah. And plan they do. So they have this guy brought in who's invented a facial recognition software that's been used in security cameras and such.
And used against him.
Used against him. Fitzgerald wants to buy the patent off of him, but he's been framed up in this crime where
he killed a colleague or
a partner in the business as well, but he was
blackout drunk.
Ted and Richard Topper, it's him on the footage. I don't know fucking how. I don't remember being there at all. But I'm saying, okay, no problem. I just need to get this. I get the bomb on this. What's the fastest way that I can get this crime solved and get leveraged to make it work for my plan? I know. Edgar Allan Poe then turns up at the after appearance. He's like, Edgar Allan Poe, my arch nemesis and rival. Have you forgotten about me? Well, actually, I kind of had for a minute there. No, but I knew you would have me foremost in your mind, my object of revenge. You've been probably wondering what I've been doing. Well, I've got a riddle for you, Edgar Allan Poe, a case that I think even you could solve.
I think Edgar thinks he's there to... they were working on something together. Was it like a video game or a novel or something? I know it was something like fairly light, where they were writing something together, which I was like, ooh, collaboration, cool. But it's like, no, mystery for him to solve. And Edgar was like, ooh, this is a saucy one. Let me just have a look at this.
Yeah.
Instantly pegged, yeah, it's the manager of the company. He's framed him.
Yeah. So goes to that customer Fitzgerald then going out to meet with the head of the company and saying, interested in buying the majority stake on buying up the patent on the software.
Like, yeah, yeah. Basically, he says, like, I will clear your employee's name for you, and I know it looks bad to your company that the guy who made the software that you're so famous for is done for murder. That's going to look pretty bad. The boss is like, doesn't matter to me. He's fired. What's the fucking problem? Kind of thing. And as he Fitzgerald's like, this meeting's going nowhere. Let's just bounce. And he says to Alcott that it's like, yeah, it was the boss did it. I know a grifter when I see one, kind of thing.
Yeah. So obviously why he did is that he went and killed the other dude himself, and then by using, I guess, Photoshop or whatever like that.
He had a backdoor into the software that even the designer didn't know about. Yeah. He made sure that was built into it.
Yeah, and then to doing that, able to edit the footage to see him like the other dude did the crime that you did. And Fitzgerald knows all about this.
He's put it together.
To get over this guy.
So the guy's on trial for murder one. The jury's out. They're going to come back with it. And he's working it out with the CEO. It's like, yeah, listen, I know it was you, bud. I got all this fucking evidence against you. And how about you give me 4,000, I assume, is it yen they use in this? That's the main currency.
400,000. 4,000
wouldn't be that much,
yeah. Nah, it must be talking in dollars or something.
Whatever, he's asking for a considerable portion of money to keep himself quiet. And the manager's like, I see you're a man of business as well. That's just fine by me. We can have this all hushed up, no problem. It's all good, until F. Scott Fitzgerald bursts in the courtroom and goes like, I have a recording of that guy on this recorder. They were on sale. Buy two, get one free.
He admitted to try and cover up this crime live on his dictaphone.
And it's like, your man's like, that doesn't prove anything, and the jury's coming in. You can't fucking go with that now. And he's like, it's true. It's not enough evidence on its own. But what about this check signed by you for exactly the amount of money you said on the recording? And it's like, oh shit, you're kind of in trouble there, bud.
It's not entirely admissible, but it is does not look good nonetheless.
And it does exonerate your man to some extent. Yeah, it makes it less obvious. Yeah.
This is the kind of thing that might sway public perception. Say.
And yeah, as your man accosts him outside, it's like, we had a deal. It's like, yeah, but check out your company's stocks. they've gone down in number considerably, and I'm going to buy them up at a markdown price.
Price, yes.
Can't resist the sale.
yeah.
It's pretty fun, because initially you're thinking like, oh, he's double-crossed the guy who he said he was going to help. And it's like, no, he's not doing it for justice. He's doing it for profit, but he is doing what he initially said he set out to do.
Yeah. Baron is blowing loads of money on this acquiring. If this thing is in his way, just throw money at him that the problem goes away, or buy it up so I can just stop it from obstructing me. It's just figure out workarounds, because it's not all about just paying people off. It's about just getting fucking dirt in them. Or paying them off so you do have dirt in them, and then using that against them to get more money later.
Listen, it's all like I'll buy my way out of the problem, circle. But if I can scam my way out of it a little as well, that's just doubly good. If I can get a bargain, basically, because that's F. Scott Fitzgerald's new thing.
It's my new philosophy in life.
Bargain hunting.
Can someone else pay for it?
I mean, like, to be fair, that is rich people the world over not having to pay for shit.
Mm.
It's good fucking work if you can get it. Well, yeah.
Yeah. Good to have him back, though.
It's good to have him back, and I like this new fucking take on him. Yeah. I honestly like bringing back villains and making them interesting, wacky dudes in their own right.
Yeah, well, it's like if he's coming back, it's going to be like a known entity as well. It's going to be like another player in this upcoming comic.
Because another player like, in the game, a potential sometimes ally or sometimes enemy. Yeah.
Yeah, because Dostoevsky has noticed this guy and making some moves. Like, who this could be interesting indeed. So, what's going to happen when they come up against each other? Because Dostoevsky, you know, if you came here, came for the Port Mafia, came here for the Iron Tit Debatancy. He's probably going to come here for the Guild too, if they're still hanging about.
Or maybe use the Guild to play off the other players. Yeah, he seems like that kind of guy.
Yeah. But ultimately, yeah, he might use him, but ultimately he wants to get rid of him as well.
Yes,
the only true justice is death.
And money is not about justice, and yeah.
Yeah.
His ideals are definitely different than Dostoevsky.
Yeah. It's really fun. I mean, like, you know, I loved F. Scott Fitzgerald in the previous season, and it's like having him back and seeing this again, more
rags to riches
side of him. yeah. Mm. Again, you can't help but root for the guy, even though he was like supposed to be a villain in the last season.
And yeah.
I presume he still is, but it's just so much fun to watch. You don't really mind or care. Mm.
And when this show's back, I think it was like watching the visual novel stuff. I was just, fuck this thing. I'm not even going to remember half these characters. And as soon as it actually fucking starts, I was like, oh yeah, I forgot this show's great fun.
Hmm. There's the, it's come up again, like the inverse. There's a proportion of people out there where the inverse is true, where they love the light novel ones, but they don't like these main manga ones because
really?
I guess this isn't what they're here for.
I mean, like, yeah, they're so different in tone. If you liked the way the light novels play out and that kind of thing, you probably aren't going to like the fun, love, and wackiness in this. But oh crap! Oh, sorry. Hang on a sec.
One eternity later.
Anyway, speaking of rich guys, probably too much money, showing up out of the blue and cause trouble and mischief.
Oh, yeah. You mean like social vampires, is it?
Yeah, or in this case, regular vampires. You got some Gigagano Kittero. What was that then?
Episode 57.
The Bloody Noble Ascend.
I think it's spelt wrong on the Crunchyroll thing. Like, there's a typo in the thing, but not in the actual subtitle, so that's fine.
All right.
Strange one. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, it's, following up last week's vampire, where's another vampire, apparently, which Teddy Eyeball is says, oh, it's very strange.
Usually you don't get two vampires in a row. Yeah. I like that. I like the fact that the show is like, didn't we just fucking do vampires? And they keep making reference to, I was going to call him Johnny. They keep making reference to Elite and his position in Blackbeard's army and that kind of shit. And I was like, he didn't seem like he was in Blackbeard's army. He seemed like he was his own thing.
Well, it's presumably that, like, any Western York guy is,
they're a card-carrying member of the Blackbeard Army, yeah.
Yes. because this is like a guy who apparently he's been a string of, incidents where, people have been drained of their blood, and...
and they're going through the list of Japanese yokai. Well, there's not many Japanese yokai that drink blood, and that one only drinks cat blood. I figured Nekomatsume was going to react to that, but nothing.
Yeah.
This
guy, you know, I know he's gone straight. He's been on the wagon for centuries now. It couldn't be this guy. I trust him in my life. But actually, no. But they get a call via send phone, courtesy of Sunny Obaba. It's it, yeah.
Yeah. I did like the way, like, they really want to reach out and touch each other. Those two girlfriends, Mana and
Agnes,
and yeah, but like. And she, the old sandwich is going, is like, hey, I told you stay in the fucking magic circle. How many times I gotta explain this?
That's as soon as this guy showed up. And it's lovely to see you. Oh, man. Boop. 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 It's a very delicate connection. I gotta put a lot of sentence back on it now because you just went and fucked it up.
It's kind of fun that you got the old character telling the young character how to use the phone technology. it's a good take, yeah.
But that says that, you guys have got a real number in your hands. It's because the guy that said he's coming to Japan, he's trying to get our blood to resurrect Blackbeard. Blackbeard, that guy again? Yes. So it's from, you guys hunt him down because, you know, if you don't stop him, you can have Blackbeard on your ass again.
So, Kitaro has to find this, vampire. The vampire is Lassane.
The vampire is Lassane, but while Mana is being escorted home by Nick and Musume just picks up someone following them, and there's a large man wearing a kind of prison outfit with a striped jumper and things on him.
I was thinking he kind of like, except with the kind of bowl cut, like Cody from Street Fighter and shit, you know?
Yeah.
He's
this dude on a roof who's got a limp figure like under his arm. He's like, that's a fucking vampire guy. I bet anything. Man, I get fun watches. I'm like, take care of this dude. And she gets a call out from Kitaro saying, well, fucking, just found a vampire. And by the time Kitaro gets there, he's already defeated Nekomutsume. He's like, oh, shit.
So defeated Nekomutsume. He's got another body on the ground kind of thing. So another one of his victims, and he's like, I got you, Lassane. But wouldn't you know it, the so-called victim was Lassane in disguise as a victim, I guess.
Yeah, it's apparent from the offer, it's not something entirely right with his chase, because this guy is, you know, not what you'd generally imagine when you see a vampire. He's quite a chunky dude.
A big, tough-looking dude. Yeah, sure, but not really what we've seen from vampires, the kind of old classiness.
Yeah, but I was ready to go with it though if it was. I wasn't, didn't think it was going to be. Some guy out there trying to stop the vampire and or do some other thing. And it's all a big misunderstanding. But it is a misunderstanding because, yeah, it's actually a tiny little fucking
schoolboy, I guess. Yeah.
Schoolboy with super saiyan hair and the gross fangs was a vampire all along. And he's...
Obviously he looks like a Kitaro character, but he seems less what you'd think of when you think of a vampire. But this guy's totally like, oh yeah, that guy's a vampire. Little suit, short shorts. Yeah, okay, that's fine. Not short shorts, but yeah, little shorts. Whereas Mammoth is like, what do you call that thing where a vampire has a human servant?
A familiar.
Yeah, that sounds right. He was just like, it's all part of the trap, and the other part of their trap is to not so much get a feel of Kitaro, but for Mammoth to hold him down while they rob his shit.
Yeah.
Rob the cloak so he can't break out of that magic crystal cube, because he recognizes it instantly after he sends his cloak after the vampire.
Yeah.
But he can't break out of it this time because he doesn't have his... not his cloak, it's a vest, isn't it?
It's a vest. Vest.
But it's
way too fast for him. So he's got Kitaro sealed up in that gym magic.
And then they bury him in a hole.
Yeah, it's like
bury him alive.
Yeah, and you think, fucking job done. We could finally kill that Kitaro. But then they are tormented, nay haunted, by the sentient spirit of rest, which comes to. Not wrap at the windows and get away from everything. It's like, oh my gosh, no, what's happening?
Yeah, even when he's trying to like take another victim and the thing wraps around his face and they have to tear it off, he's just there barely breathing. It's like, oh my god, I nearly fucking died.
Yeah.
Motherfucking thing was trying to suffocate me. So they catch it, they take it to a building site, as brutally as you can depict the nailing of a vest to a wooden board, they depict him nailing a vest to a wooden board, and then they put it in a safe. Oh, no, sorry, they do try cutting it with a chainsaw.
They try a number of things, but it doesn't work. It's like, we melt up an acid, it melts through the board that is nailed onto and escapes.
And the same with fire. Yeah, they can't quite burn it because it's like, it's taking too long to burn, and why burn the wooden plank it's nailed to? It's like, this is tricky. Okay, we'll put it in a safe and drop it into the ocean.
Yeah.
There's some real fucking, like, mobster murder vibes in this, and I do like the haunting of the whole episode. It's a pretty fun premise. Again, like, villain's point of view, Kid Iroh's kind of terrifying.
But I just like the fact that it's the vampire this time that's being haunted and hunted down by an unkillable undead fiend. Even if you put it in a safe and throw the bomb in the ocean, it'll still come back to you. Because I surmise if that vest is still flying around, the point is Kid Iroh's still alive, so better go and make sure he's finished off. So they go and they dig up the little cosmic cube he's been fucking buried in, and then they smash it with a hammer. Okay, like, now this time he's fucking dead for sure. But then the vest comes back again. It's like, how did this happen?
The vest comes back again, and they decide to make a break for it to the countryside like they're criminals. We'll wait till the heat dies down. But when, you know, the vest fucking follow them there and is like looking at them in the window, if a vest can look in a window, I guess it can. They also discuss how the fuck the vest got out of the safe, and they have like a very convoluted plan as to how it got out. It loosened one of its threads to pick the lock of the safe it was in. That kind of shit. Some good stuff. And they both arrived on the same idea. That kind of thing.
Roz, you try to tell me this sentient spirit or breath, if you can't break with chainsaws or acid or fire or nothing, there's somehow with its own ingenuity, there's like had a thread of curve and came out through a tiny little hole in the safe, went all the way around and missed around with the dog, and got the combination, escaped to the safe and got the surface of the ocean and got back into dry land and flew all the way here and is now trying to kill us. Is that what you're saying to me now, Matt? Is that what you're trying to say to me seriously? It can't happen. It's impossible. But boss, it's happening right now.
I'm enjoying these two characters playing off each other and the kind of dialogue. It's like, no way, man, no way. It's pretty fun.
Yeah, it's just a little bit was as well, with the way La Seine is dressed up, but he has the fun terrifying vampire head, but he's a tiny little boy body with the shorts and the little dicky boy. It's a bit like of a Conan mystery. He's trying to solve the mystery of the sentient unkillable vest.
Yeah, it could be that. But them hiding out in the log cabin in the woods and the thing coming at them, and they're just like, oh shit, seal up all the cracks so I can't get in. It's like, it's coming down the chimney, light a fucking fire. And then they get the blowback from the fire and they're trying to get out, but the vest is holding the door closed.
it's tied around the hand. It's like,
yeah.
So the vest is trying to kill him, like, you know, whatever about the vampire. There's a human dude in there. He's gonna, like, succumb to the smoke.
Yeah, I mean, like, he's a super strong human, but I mean, like, you know, carbon monoxide poisoning is going to affect him just as bad. And at that stage, Kid Iroh's like, all right, I pranked you motherfuckers enough. I was alive the whole time. There was actually a very simple explanation to my far complicated way of driving you guys insane, essentially.
Yeah.
Because there was no reason for him to do all this other than to fuck with these guys. Basically, Mana dug him up and... they got Agnes to undo the little box.
Yeah, they put a fake cosmic cube in there, and that's what they smashed.
And so he has been controlling the spirit vest the entire fucking time.
Yes.
But then, wouldn't you know it, our fucking, like, regular Kid Iroh thing, he says, I'll let you walk, kind of thing, after breaking the vampire's teeth. Literally defanging him, rather than, I guess, figuratively doing it as well. But yeah, our fucking shonen protagonist, Outlast, I've forgotten his name now.
Oh yes, Rei Isurugi shows up, you'd seen a glimpse of him earlier in the episode, like watching things from top of a building.
Yeah.
Kid Iroh, I'm here suddenly to fuck up all of this.
Yeah, I'm here to fuck up your general Kid Iroh plot. He uses some sort of fire-based demon that he's eaten, I guess.
I thought he absorbed that little fireman, in an earlier episode. It was like a... Was that fire yokai, I think, appeared?
Well, I guess
before.
That's a... Yeah, I guess that's a good sign that maybe they'll be able to be released from him, because it seemed to be like he's absorbing these guys and they're just straight up fucking dead. Mm. Like double dead? Like ghost dead, if that makes sense. He murdered their ghosts. I don't know.
Well, it's more like their souls are trapped in like unending torment and in bondage within the marks in his body.
Yeah. Well, yeah, if it's the fire guy from before, then it's probably like, yeah, there's probably a way to get him out and get them out and clean, that kind of way.
Yeah.
But yeah, he absorbs the vampire, he kicks Mammoth's ass for good luck, and like kind of says, like, oh, you just have to live with the fact that your master's dead. which is pretty shitty.
That's pretty crap.
Well, yeah, he's kind of an asshole. But I guess it's showing his similarity to Kitaro, where he doesn't attack humans, whether they're good or bad. Well, he doesn't kill them. He definitely attacked that guy.
Yeah. But, like, we've seen those same moves was done by Yoda Shonen here, and they'd be like, this guy's totally a badass. He doesn't care about any of these villains. He just goes because Nero gets the job done.
He's as tough like, as the villains, making him an asshole. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's like, Kitaro had this, he had this in well in hand. He had taken care of, and this guy just says, ah, Kitaro, you loser, you're losing again. No, I'm not. It's just
like,
you come
Kitaro
along.
Basically was the only reason it took him as long to do it as he did, is because he was fucking with this vampire. For whatever reason, his own reasons. Maybe he's just like, I'm gonna freak this fucker out a bit. He did drain the blood of people. Let's make him suffer a little before I literally defang him, and then, because at that stage, like, at the end of the fight, like, Kira was like, oh, I know you're super fast and everything, but now I've read your moves, you know, standard shonen stuff.
Yeah.
But it's like, yeah, like you say, he has it well in hand, he has it totally under control, he has this guy defeated, and he's like, what am I going to do with you now? Am I going to, like, turn you, like, into a spirit so you have to reconstitute as a yokai, or am I going to let you off since you can't really do any harm without any fangs? Just let him leave Japan, leave his jurisdiction, that kind of thing. And it's like, this guy swoops in and takes the kill, basically.
But yeah. Didn't need to kill him. Like, that's a problem with these, like, with heroes today. They got no sense of theatrics. No, there's no patience.
Yeah.
No nuance.
And it, like, I guess the point of that bit at the end is kind of like, oh, that leaves a bit of a sour taste in the mouth, because other than that, the episode's quite an enjoyable Kitaro romp, you know?
Yeah, it was just something in by itself. It just seemed like, we've got to scratch and remind you that, oh, by the way, there's a main plotline happening here as well.
Yeah. And even trying to tie, like, last week's episode, which had nothing to do with anything, into the main plotline. It's like, yes, he was part of Blackbeard's army. We didn't mention it at the time because it wasn't relevant.
Yeah.
Now that we have a second vampire of the week.
Yeah, even then, originally, let's say, the character if you read one of the comic stories, he was just, there were like the same string of like attacks with people being drained of their blood, but he was just like a regular guy, he was a criminal who was just using the latest bloodsucking technology to just gather blood all over Paris for profit? I don't know. But it's kind of make him a full-on vampire, and then we can just tie him into the Western yokai thing. Why not?
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. I guess that makes more sense if that was the original story, and they're hiding out like criminals, because in the original one, they kind of were, rather than supernatural things. A vampire haunted by a vest. That's a new one on me. It's pretty good.
Yeah, I did like this, the turnabout, and just like to see the undead monsters getting kind of the horror movie treatment put on them for a moment instead.
Yeah.
Next week, Nezumi Ohto goes back to his old tricks.
Is he ever not up to his old tricks, though?
Well, yeah, but this time it's personal? I don't know.
This time he's got a new spin on it. Sure.
Sure. Anyways.
And you didn't watch any of the we kind of skipped past them there, the
Demon Slayer stuff essentially. Sure.
Yeah.
I did not watch Vivi Saga. No, I did not. Precure, I'm a bit I'm a week behind again still. But I'll might get caught back up with it, and just
like you say, watch them in a bunch. It seems to be enjoying them more. Yeah,
I do know they are going back to the Casino Planet again to have another heist with the Blue Cat, the Phantom Thief again. But this time, Blue Thief needs their help to pull off the job of the century or something like that.
Enemies become friends, alright.
But will the Precure as well, like the vanguard of justice that they are, go along with such a crazy scheme on their other side of the law? I don't know. I'll find out and I'll tell you all about it when I get the opportunity.
I think that's most everything we watched then.
I hope so.
Yeah. So I suppose I don't know what's happening next in Dynamite in the Brain.
That'll do it for, what's it now? I'm not sure what's going on with Dynamite in the Brain, but I know if you go to the front page of Dynamite in the Brain right now, I'll be able to listen to Brian and Anthony and Gary talk about the anime that didn't make them. Talk about Chicken Tycoon, Jushin Liger, and Tokyo Pig. That sounds like a three-course delicious meal of anime nostalgia. So
I don't know if I need a tiger, but yeah, okay, sounds good.
That's what we've been up to as well. If you enjoy Christmas movies at any time of the year, we recently invited to join those lovely boys, Joseph and Brad, over on Christmas Creeps to round out their May special about seasonal anime, as in anime, of course.
I have to overpronounce it when I'm thinking of it. Yeah.
They're like they had a whole month of Christmas related anime types going on there. We were closing out there. We're talking about some Tokyo Godfathers by Satoshi Kon.
That was a good time. Yeah.
It was good.
Both talking about it and the film. So great.
Yep, and the dude would say, "Oh, is this one of the better things we've ever put out?" Which I think just added, I don't know, just being polite, but either way, it's nice to hear.
yeah, it's good to be appreciated, and we had a great time there as well. So, yeah, you can check out that. What episode number is that?
I'm not sure what episode number it is. It'll be the latest one at time of recording. Expect to be found over on ChristmasCreeps.com, and we're posting that on Secret Santa Madness in any case. And also just go to Christmas Creeps and just listen to their stuff about Christmas movies throughout the year, because Christmas isn't just for Christmas. It's for life, apparently.
I mean, I've gotten onto good things with them. I think I watched... what was that Christmas? It was a CGI animated thing with... like Santa Claus is like a royal lineage thing in the UK.
Arthur Christmas.
Yes, I watched that on their recommendation, and that's kind of become a staple for me now Christmas. Yeah. I think that's a lock. But also, they review the movies that I really don't want to watch.
Yeah,
which it spares me a lot of effort, and I appreciate it.
Yes. Anyways, again, that can be found over at ChristmasCreeps.com. So give them a try any time of the year. Right.
And I forgot how to close it out. And God damn it, no, that's our podcast. Shocking revelation. Nope.
No. Well, I think that'll end this week's episode of Let's Go Jojo. We'll be back here next week for Green Day and Oasis Part 3.
But in the meantime, mostly just Oasis, but yeah.
Yeah. But in the meantime, you can check our regular podcast at secretcentermanus.com and dynamitinthebrain.com. Good afternoon.
Bye.